Creator Chat is brought to you in part by Audible. Audible is, of course, the premier audiobook service, perfect for folks who want their books read to them. Thousands and thousands of titles to choose from in all genres, sci-fi, fantasy, biographies, history, thrillers, mysteries, and more. We've got a great offer for listeners on this podcast, 2 free audiobooks when you sign up. And those books are yours to keep even if you decide to cancel your Audible subscription, which is $14.95 a month and gives you a free book every month of your choosing, as well as some other fun perks. Membership has its privileges. Hit up bit.ly/geekbookclub to start your free trial and get those 2 free books on lock. Once again, bit.ly/geekbookclub. And now, let's get into the show. Welcome to another Creator Chat on the SGGQA podcast channel, an ongoing series of interviews where we get to hear from folks making cool things on the internet. The goal is always to broaden our horizons, to really listen to more voices in the creator space and check out different points of view. It's never fun when our hobby becomes an echo chamber. Issa has been a pal of mine for years. She's contributed to tech commentary at larger publications, but has taken it on herself to host her own style of review on her personal YouTube channel. And that's a key word, style. Issa Does Tech has only been around for about a year, but from her first video published, she came out the gate approaching her commentary with a polished presentation and a lot of style. It's not all roses, though. She had a lot to share on the challenges of being a tech reviewer when you have something a little different to say about consumer electronics.
And we are live. Issa, thank you so much for jumping in on one of these podcasts. I'm really excited.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. I feel like I've started too many of these podcasts off with the same statement, but it has been a shockingly long time since we've had the ability to chat.
Yes, definitely.
It's been way too long.
It's been a hot second, yeah.
So I just want to kick this off. I know we're still in some global turmoil and some issues around the planet. Just checking in, you, family, friends. You're doing all right. You're staying safe. Any crazy
I'm doing
risks.
All right. In the last 100 plus days, I've been out of the house a total of one time.
Yeah.
I guess we're just lucky in a way that we're able to work from home. I can only imagine what other people are going through. I mean, aside from all the things happening, them having to adjust to the whole work from home scenario, because it's tough. It's not that easy. It's not like you're just at home and you start doing stuff, right? There's work-home balance, there's setting up your workspace, all these other things.
Yeah. It took us a while for us to get Marie set up. Her job was amazing for saying, you know, stay at home, you're doing office work and you jump in on the company VPN. It took us, I don't know, it was about a month before we really had like her workstation set up. It was kind of surprising that for two people who were as good at tech and video games as we claim to be, it took us a really long time.
No, yeah. I mean, it's not as simple as like put a table here and we're working. You have to fix actual stuff you're working on. You have to fix your mindset too, because a lot of the time I think the comment that I get from people is that they felt like they were so tired, way too tired working from home than they ever have felt like when they were in the office. And I realize it's because when you work from home, you also have to set some boundaries between like how you work, where you work, when you work, versus if you go to the office, work there, come home, relax.
Yeah. Well, and I know from my wife's perspective, it was also a problem with, you know, she can just kind of get up, stretch her legs, take a walk around the office. And here it was like, where do you go? Like, I'll go to the kitchen again, I guess. And it's just not as... Oh, go ahead.
It's also a common theme for us content creators, because like, what do you take photos of? I've been taking photos of my dogs. Like, I'm lucky I have dogs. They're very photogenic. They're moving subjects. They're a good study. But like, I can only take so many photos of my mom's garden. Like right now, I'm not even taking as many photos of the garden because they stop, like stuff stopped blooming.
Right.
So it's like now I'm stuck with the dogs.
I've been having to like bolster my collection of like ridiculous action figures from my youth just so I can take them right outside. Yeah. And like, well, here's a macro photo of Godzuki. Mm-hmm. So that's how you can tell by the pixels that this is a really good phone camera.
We find our ways.
we do. I mean, like I've said this on a couple other previous. I mean, Josh and I had a little bit of a conversation on this too, where in the worst possible way, this has been an incredible opportunity. I mean, so often we talk about tech and we share our experiences. You not just with the tech side of things, but also the lifestyle, the travel, and the vlogging. Mm-hmm. And now the whole world is relying on consumer electronics in the way that we have sort of been using them for a while.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think sales for earphones and phones have been skyrocketing.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, you can deal with it if you're not working from home, but if you are, like, you sort of tend to notice all these little things, right?
Mm-hmm. I've
been getting... Go on, sorry.
No, please. I insist.
Oh, no.
You go.
I mean, I just started buying plants. Actually, I didn't buy them fine. I stole them from my mom's garden. Now I'm growing my own plants because if I'm staying in my room this much, I need for it to feel like it's a place that energizes me. You know? And
sure.
These are things I never noticed.
Oh, absolutely. So. It's been interesting. I mean, the one benefit that we've got here in Southern California is just a bit more space. You know, like there are hiking trails. You know, we moved way out into the suburbs. So we're still doing the teachable moment with our daughter. Oh, some other people are walking on the sidewalk. Let's really, you know, move over to the side and try and not get hit by a car driving or anything like that. But that as like the one thing where I'm talking to my friends out on the East Coast, so much more challenging when the population density doesn't allow for that little mini excursion.
It seems like such a struggle. Like, I mean, if I remember correctly, New York was the first area that was badly hit. And we were talking about it. And it's like, it does, I mean, what is the word? It makes sense. Not that it got hit, but the fact that it spread so fast because they had a train system.
Yeah.
Versus if you're in California and you go drive everywhere, right?
Yeah, everyone's sort of sealed up in their own little hermetically closed off bubble car solutions. But now I actually think that's working against us is because you don't treat other people as people in California. You treat them as the cars that are in your way in traffic. And I feel like the folks out on the East Coast have to interact with other people. Like they have to get along and you have to encounter humanity. Whereas here in California, there's like an individualism that we're very proud of. But now I think it's kind of messing us up because people aren't considering the welfare of others and how we're all in this together. While New Yorkers are like, man, at some point I'm gonna have to get back on a subway. Don't be gross. I won't be gross and we'll be cool. And Californians aren't like that at all.
I can sort of identify because we also, I mean, I'm based in Manila and we also drive everywhere. Everywhere. We have a train system, but it's not something you go on by choice. So it's pretty much the same boat.
Yeah.
It's tough because it's sort of, you're right, it becomes a whole issue of me and trying to get myself safe versus trying to fix the community so that we're all safe, right?
Yeah. I'm hoping, unfortunately, with some recent headlines here in the United States that if we at least don't sort out our own issues with freedom and individualism, that other countries will at least learn what not to do by following our example.
I mean, I can only comment about our politics and pretty much same boat.
Yeah. I feel like we're along for a ride that we really didn't want to get on.
Yeah, I know. A pandemic is very telling of a lot of things. That's what I'm going to say. It's not that it created new problems, but it exposes a lot of the flaws in the system. More than ever, you need everything in place and everything functioning.
Mm-hmm.
But because that isn't the case, everything is exacerbated, and that can be very frustrating.
Especially at a time where I feel like we've never had better resources. Yeah, I can imagine what this situation would have been like for people facing the Spanish flu and, you know, the ability to have endless entertainment, to disseminate information, communicate with loved ones. Like, we all have supercomputers in our pockets, and yet we still see where some of our infrastructure isn't as robust as we thought it was.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, can you imagine... I'm sorry.
No. Please. I know. Apologies to people listening to this podcast. I know in our little streaming situation here, we've got just a fraction of a delay. So I have a bad habit of stepping on my guests anyway, but I'm going to try.
So I was just going to add, like, can you imagine being on a lockdown this long without Netflix? That, I guess, is just...
I can survive anything so long as I've got my Netflix.
Or, I mean, Netflix or YouTube, right? Hulu or what have you. Like, just imagine living alone and being in a square room for the last 3 months and having nothing to do.
Yeah. It's the worst possible way for this to happen, but I think it's been the best. It's been an amazing opportunity to really put all of our sort of tech and services to the test. I want to transition and start talking about some happier stuff, though. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, let's do that.
That you're doing well and that your family's doing well. I want to circle back just real briefly. I was trying to think back. It was the Oppo R11 launch. Was that when we got to hang out for the first time?
Yes, I think so. Yes. Definitely one of the R's.
Because we both got to do the manufacturing tour, if I remember correctly, where we had the clean room.
Yes. We did do that. And then we went on that egg nest bean building for the launch.
My translator thing didn't really work at all. I was trying to wear that headset.
Yes, basically all of us. So there was a small group of international journalists, and then the rest were Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it was nice to see how everything was, like this would be a local launch for them. But then at the same time, we were just all sort of lost. Yeah. We're just like, what? Where? What are they saying?
It's like, they're taking us out of Shenzhen down some creepy dirt road to a giant campus factory. I guess this is cool. I guess this is fine. Let's do this.
We're good. Yeah. And so, a funny story, that was actually the very first tech video I ever shot. Like, I helped shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And you know the story. You know this because I was stupid.
You weren't stupid. No, actually, I mean, considering...
It was a little stupid.
No. I have to give you a lot of credit. That was my very first trip to China. I mean, for anything, just jumping right into the middle of Shenzhen. And you were so much more accomplished a traveler that some of, like, I think you caught up faster on the tech journalism side than I was catching up on leaving the United States or traveling to another country not in Europe side on the equation.
Well, I mean, I also did miss the table. That was the big what moment for me. So,
that's
for the people, right? So, for the people who are watching, what happened was, I mean, when you travel to China, it's unlike any country. It's unlike traveling to the Philippines. In the Philippines, you travel, you come here, everyone speaks in English. Like, they will understand you. Mm-hmm. They will respond to you. They know what you're saying. They can give you some words. That's not the case in China. In China, it's Chinese or bust, right?
Yeah.
And so the PR people, they're really nice because they can speak in English, but they aren't as expressive. You know, it's like pretty simple.
Yeah.
Like their responses are pretty simple. So on the very first time I had to shoot a video, I was asking if at the event there would be tables. Because it's hard to hold the camera up with my short arms, hold the phone out, and shoot. Like, it's hard.
It's really hard.
I can't really remember what she said, but I think she was saying no. So I was like, oh man, there are no tables at this event. So the whole time I was just like, trying so hard.
Well, and
it was just, it was.
And to set the stage, you, so okay, we go to this really this funky egg-shaped building thing where they're doing the press conference, and they have a press area off to the side.
Mm-hmm.
I always hate, this has always been one of my biggest pet peeves, is when they're like, now that we finished the presentation, we're going to let you scurry off and go hands-on with our review area, as you see all of these tech nerd journalists like lugging tripods and cameras all in a flurry to try and land a good spot to try and shoot mm-hmm. some video of one of these products. So you went scurrying off. You did exactly what you were supposed to do, but you found a display that was just on a wall. So, I mean, it was just a wall display. And Nicole and I, we like rounded a corner because that display filled up fast. So you went to the display first. We turned a corner. There was a whole room with a beautiful Star Trek lit table off on the other side. And you're like, so Nicole and I shot there and we kind of lost track of you. And when we were all done, we came back to see you like struggling to still keep your arm up.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it wasn't. It didn't even end there. Like, what happened was, after I asked the girl, I was like, and she goes to me, she says, they'll be waiting at the bus. And I mean, if you're told that, you sort of feel like that means we're about to leave, right? That's what people say, we're waiting on the bus, right? So I was like, oh my gosh, fudge. Okay, let me get on the bus. I get to the bus, no one's there. What she meant was, we meet at the bus when everyone's done. But she said, we'll be waiting in the bus. So I basically shot without a table, didn't get enough time because I thought we were leaving and I didn't want to get left in this bean of a building.
Right. So where no one speaks English.
I remember, like, what, 20 minutes later, people start boarding the bus and you and Nicole come in and you guys... I was sitting there, I'm like, where have you guys been? And you go like, yeah, we just finished shooting on the tables. Yeah. And I'm like, wait, what? You just finished? There's a table. Like,
yeah, it was right over there on the side.
it was just like, wow. I remember my thought process then was I was pretty insecure because I knew I needed way more time to shoot than anyone. Like, it was in my camera. I didn't know how to set it right. I knew I would, you know, it's tough. Because of that panic, I ran to the wall, didn't find the table, ended up on the bus early.
I mean, it's one of those things, like, you can be as prepared as you think you should be. And shooting an event or shooting a convention is a completely different set of problems from any other kind of travel or product photography. And I've been doing this for longer than I care to admit. And every time I show up at a trade show, there's something new, completely unexpected, major meltdown, unfixable problem that we have to, you know, work around on the day. So I'm not going to say you were stupid. I'm going to say that you were a little green, but that you still got your gig done. And you did so aggressively while also...
I mean, I think I was also wearing a skirt and still trying to be cute when all of this was going down too, though.
Well, so that's actually something, if you don't mind my pivoting, that's actually also something that I wouldn't mind, you know, leaning into a bit of this conversation on. I had a bit of a chat during my Velvet unboxing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm serious. We're seriously looking at the Velvet for my wife's next phone. And this is totally something that I don't think men in tech ever consider. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I'll show up at like a pitch meeting or a PR PR agency, and like dude bros and beat up Nike kicks will throw like busted iPhones on their table, and then you'll see the women in the room like put together, and like they have to be. And this is a silly reason. Yeah. Like, for dudes, we would think this is a silly reason to maybe consider a phone, but it was all in like these style design cases that are going to match her Tumi purse, and that are going to blend with her OGO bags and her laptop case and like the whole package of her being a female executive. I can roll up to a trade show in kicks, cargo shorts, and a graphic tee. I don't know that audiences always extend the same consideration for women voices in these conversations. Mm.
So, okay, I want to say, first off, I didn't get those cases, and I'm so jealous. One.
You should be so jealous.
Like,
this case is so nice. Straps are so nice. The handhold, the grip is so nice. And the phone is already skinny enough because I've got little hobbit hands that, like, the combo. It's amazing. We should hang out at the Shire sometime.
Dude. Now,
but, like, this is so sweet.
I plan to steal the one with a card thing from Joshua. I don't know if it's the same for you, but a lot of women tend to have these wallets on their phones. I have actually covered these tiny wallet cases just because of that. But going back to the being put together, this is actually a common conversation I have with women who, at least in the Philippines, we run around cover tech, and an added factor would be that it's a humid country.
Mm-hmm.
So there are so many things you need to fix. I go to Joshua and I ask for help because I'm like, do I look cute in this? Because I need to look cute. But if I'm covering a tech show, I need to be able to run and squat and do that, you know? So, I mean, looking cute enough is not that easy, but looking cute and being functional is even harder. It's always a running joke between us that, you know, you go to an event, they say it's a semi-formal event, but if it's a tech event, dude bros are going to roll in their hoodies and their sneakers. You know? I'm like, I'm going to wear heels. But even then, it's a struggle, but it's also part of one, enjoying yourself and dressing yourself. Like, the type of content I make, I try to think about me as a consumer.
Mm-hmm.
As a woman, there are things I notice that I'm sure a lot of the male tech audience wouldn't. For example, if someone does a hands-on, I will notice the nails. Your nails are dirty. I won't be able to focus on that phone.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, personally, my content, I try to reach the more lifestyle audience. I try to reach women. As to if it's been as successful as I'd want it to be, it's questionable. Right now, I have like a 60-40 ratio, which I'm told is, you know, bigger than most. But
still,
I would love that to be like 50-50, right? Yeah. Like, that is the goal. I want to talk to people who are me. Right? But if I want to talk to people who are me, and if I notice stuff like, oh my gosh, what's wrong with your nails?
Right.
Or like, what is going on in that background? You know, like, it's a very detail-oriented thing too. So if that's the case, I want to be able to find that balance where I'm able to do the work, but I'm able to present myself in that way.
Well, and also,
it's tough for sure.
In fairness, I mean, also, it's I think there's a difference between because I feel like audiences are primed for this, you know, like amazingly high quality video production. You present yourself mm-hmm. on your channel with style and with grace. I very much enjoy your content. And I want to say Issa Does Tech is now around about a year as a standalone, as a standalone channel. It's about a year now.
Yes.
From your first video, you were already putting together music and titles and graphics and edits that, you know, for my channel being established, absolutely shame the production style of my videos. My video, I talk to the camera and maybe I'll trim my beard. Maybe. I think my manicure game is usually clean. Like the hygiene is there, but I'm not putting together as rich a story as I feel like you're putting together. So it's not just criticism of someone's nails. I mean, I feel like audiences will sit there and complain like, oh, my shirt was wrinkled. And then I'll go and look at that if they have a YouTube channel and like, you can barely hold a phone camera steady to shoot video for your YouTube mm-hmm. channel. I'm not taking criticism from you. But I feel like you are coming at this from someone who actually values good presentation and style. And I think that's reflected in your content, as opposed to someone who just complains when someone's video isn't good enough for some standard of them eating Cheetos on their couch. Maybe they'll mix in some Pop-Tarts and some toaster. Yeah, I don't know, like chicken tenders.
I mean, I appreciate that. I'm happy that people are getting that. Although I also have to admit that coming into this from a tech journalist perspective, there was so many things I'm learning. I learned and I'm still learning. One of the hard truth bombs that I recently got was that what makes you a good tech journalist does not necessarily make you a good content creator.
Yes, I would agree with that.
It's finding the balance between creating your content and presenting the facts that you need to present. For me, for example, one big issue was that it took me so long to shoot my videos mm-hmm. because I wanted everything on point. Like, I would fix everything to the minute detail. And it would go to my disadvantage because then I'd be late. And mm-hmm. then I wouldn't get the views, you know? So it's balancing that. The funny thing was, like, lately I've been trying to relax more on some prod arrangements that I've been making,
right.
And no one is noticing.
Right.
It's like, I have been trying to do this one very specific tiny thing that adds to like an hour more of me setting up, and no one is noticing that it's gone. And it's like, it's tough. It's a tough pill to swallow,
mm-hmm.
but it's also part of the YouTube growth, right? It's also part of your growth as a creator.
Well, and definitely kind of learning some of those lessons. So, I mean, you can tell me that something has been a challenge, or maybe you were disappointed that this really intricate thing wasn't resonating with your audience. But I feel that's also mm-hmm. a very positive commentary on the audience you've been building, because of how stylish your videos continue to be, you know, so maybe they're not seeing this one intricate little camera move or this one intricate little piece that takes you a lot of time to create. That's one piece of an overall really satisfying aesthetic. So they might not pick up on that, but I feel that that's also a good indication that the rest of your style is working with the people that are following your channel.
I mean, I certainly hope so, because then I would have been breaking my back for nothing. although I'm highly appreciative of the people who support my channel. I know that it's not content that one would typically find in the text.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten nasty comments about, you know, the stuff I do and why I do it. Mm-hmm. Sort of still can't wrap my brain around why you'd be so mad that I'm not reviewing something in the way that you'd want it to be reviewed. Right. Like, I can link you so many other channels, though, you know?
If you just want like, a bunch of people to all validate your experience, yeah, they're out there.
Yeah. And, like, it's fine. Like, you can watch them. I'm okay with that. Everyone. Watch everyone. I love that. Mm-hmm. But there are people who get worked up that I do the type of content I do. I post about it a lot. Mostly because I'm so personally, I don't, it's not like I'm trying to tell off that person, although I am, but I post it because I know so many women who don't want to speak out.
Yeah.
Just because they feel like they'll be at the receiving end of this hate.
Yeah.
And I get a lot of nice comments too, but I feel like when people see that, they're going to be, I mean, women might see that and say, well, she doesn't get mean comments, so she's okay to speak out. And I'm like, I do, and everyone does, mm-hmm, but that doesn't invalidate what you think.
Right.
And I mean, I've gotten emails from women who want to do the same, who write about tech, but are now venturing towards like videos and speaking their mind. And it's like, it's so refreshing to me because at the end of the day, that is my ultimate goal, to have my voice be heard, not just in the Philippines, but in the global platform as someone who represents a female's experience in tech, and not just a female's experience in tech, but an Asian's experience in tech. You know
right.
what I mean?
I find that some of that is really, I find that it's a little disappointing how obvious the different challenges seem to slide. Where, mm-hmm, I mean, I'm very forthright in a part of my review process is heavily weighted on my experiences and my opinions on these gadgets. Mm-hmm. I try to be very upfront with, this is the type of stuff I do, so this is why I value these features. And I find that while I get challenged, I don't seem to be directly as confronted as maybe other content creators, people of color, might be, who are more outwardly of a different region or ethnic background or something like that. And I find that that also continues to compound, like from some of the conversations that you and I have had, some of the conversations that Flo and I have had, Nicole, mm-hmm, and I have had, where, I'm really like kind of focused specifically, you go to great lengths in your LG Velvet video, your most recent video, talking about what you value. And it's almost like you've got to anticipate the negative comment you're going to get so that then you can just get on with the rest of the review. But if you hadn't included that part in the video, I know and you know what kinds of comments you would have gotten. Well, but it doesn't have a Snapdragon 865, or I can get a gaming phone. I can hear you anticipating that in a confrontational way that I know I wouldn't have to face as directly.
Yeah, it does happen a lot. I think the default for a lot of people when they see a woman reviewing tech is that they are only in it for the superficial thing. And while I like the superficial things, and I do, and it matters, I also look at what's inside. So like I said in my video, for example, I mean, I value the design, but it's also, I just have a minimum.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit here and start talking about its lack of refresh rate when admittedly I never noticed,
right,
because I'm not that demographic. So it's sad. You pointed it out. It's sad that I do feel like I have to justify myself. But it's also, it's getting it out there in one go.
Mm-hmm.
Because I will. And it's just a sad fact. And it's a sad fact that the default is that, you know?
Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to SomeGadgetGuy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch. But with an audience demographic and audience split where... I felt kind of sort of honored when my female viewership hit 15%. I mean, in tech, and especially for someone who kind of, I mean, like I conduct myself in a very sort of straightforward vloggy style of a video. I'm not going for high concept or a lot of style. It's everything I can do to just say the words sometimes and get that video out onto the internet.
Oh no, but I like your videos though, because they're very like informative. I remember the last one that I randomly Googled was when I was trying to understand these audio terms.
Oh yeah.
And you gave me, it gave me your video on, what is the word? Like the different file format.
Yeah.
But yeah, I watched that. So anyway, sorry, I just had to say thank you for that video. It helped me a lot.
You're very welcome. That's what I do well. I'm not good at moving a camera while it's shooting video to get like a panning shot. So I don't try and I stay out of that lane. But when looking at some of those experiences, like you've been saying, you know, talking offline with other female content creators, especially journalists, women that are sometimes thrust into a tech conversation that they might not have been trying to prepare their career for, getting caught up to speed. Mm-hmm. When you're seeing that kind of an audience breakdown on YouTube in general, that's a huge leg up on male content creators. In the world of tech, that's unheard of to have almost that kind of split male to female on those types of videos. I would have to imagine that the feedback as your channel's grown so well over 1 year, that feedback has to be pretty validating for what it is that you're trying to accomplish.
I mean, again, I want more. How do I put it this way?
No, we so all many, want more.
It's just, there's so many things that tech can do right now that would benefit our lives. And when I say our, I mean the more lifestyle female. It's just that the information that is out there, and there's nothing wrong with this because to each his own, but the information that is out there is mostly presented for a male demographic. That's the main problem. If you give me all this information, I'm not going to process it because that's not what I am looking for in a device. So if you look at everyone you know, every single girl has a phone.
Right.
But women are conditioned to just take it because they're so used to what's already there, and then they just make do, you know? Like, how technology has been moving, like, in terms of smartphones is basically, this is what the market has. Let's just use that because I don't know. And then, sure, I'd love more things, but it's not there. So let's just work with this.
And please correct me if I'm maybe out of not reading this correctly, but it seems to me, outside of my family, where my mom, my sister, you know, my mom's a computer programmer. My sister's got a PhD in optics. Like, I come from a tech savvy family.
That's an impressive family. Yeah.
I'm the black sheep. It's like, I'm going to go be a voiceover actor. I kind of had a warped sense. You know, you when you grow up, you think, oh, well, all families are kind of the same. And no family's kind of like my family. So I didn't really feel like I got a good read on this until a bit later in life. But when I kind of speak with family and friends, or when I look outside at my social circles, the tech experience for women seems to be one of acquiescing, that women might be looking at this market, might actually have some desire on something, but it's just not worth fighting the brother or fighting the dad or fighting the husband who knows what's going to be best. And that's what they kind of end up with. And then that seems to be trained, reinforced, and then becomes kind of a cycle on what their tech buying habits are going to be.
Yeah, no, definitely. The main way that I explain why I make what I make is this. As a girl, if you see in a commercial this really cute tech that you want, you walk into a tech store and you say, I want this, what can this do? And the tech bro will tech-splain and be like, you don't want that, that's more expensive. This is more value for money, these are the specs. But of course, in a way of what he wants.
What you need there, little lady? This one's got more giggle flips. And that one doesn't have enough megapixels. And no one would want that one.
No, but exactly. And I'm like, that sucks. Because a lot of the time, you want things that you need for the things you would want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, if you project to me what you want, that may fit if you're lucky, but most of the time it won't. And then, you know, women are then resigned to just get the whatever it is they've been offered, don't really enjoy it, and then it's a cycle. I'm not into tech because it's unexciting. It's unimaginative.
And it doesn't feel like an empowered decision.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if I only had to use what someone else kind of pushed me towards, and there was sort of a social understanding that through this hierarchy, I wasn't going to challenge this authority, then I never would have had the experience. I mean, even if it was a poor product, it wouldn't have been the product I chose or I wanted to try.
And I mean, especially at this point in technology, I'd get it if it were sort of a new tech, right? That this other one wouldn't function at all, right? It's like, it's crap. It won't, like, no. But we're at the point when, I mean, at least from my side of the world, you can buy a $100 phone and you're fine. You're good. It'll give you great photos. It'll give you great performance. And it's like, if the bar is so high, you're welcome to your choice.
Yeah.
So, I hope we get there, but I also want to point out that I am very thankful for people who support me even if and when this isn't their demographic, like people like you or people. I mean, our tech space is really, really nice because there are so many tech reviewers, male tech reviewers. I mean, there's so many male tech reviewers. But a lot of them have been very supportive. To me, that means a lot because just having me on your podcast sort of legitimizes how I feel to other people. I mean, I know it sucks that it has to work that way, where I have to sort of show people that these people respect me. So I'm sort of like, in effect, given an ear.
Right.
Like, I know that sucks. But at this point, it's sort of being an ally.
Well,
to the cause.
Well,
and I appreciate that.
And this is you're more than welcome. I enjoy your work, so I like to talk about good work. It's this has actually been really helpful on my side to turn your situation into something about me. If we can just talk about me for just a second here. sorry, it was a terrible joke. Because
I was trying to hold in my laughter.
Bless you for playing along as well as you did. the thing I feel like audiences haven't really gotten great insight on this wonderful world of podcasting, and we're all putting out content, we're all making these videos, we're dumping so much effort into this, and I think it's just been sort of normalized that audiences expect higher and higher production quality, more seamless commentary, and they aren't really primed for what it's like to really exist in this space. Everyone seems to be able to make one good video. I mean, like, look at the amazing tech tools everyone's walking around in their pocket with. I mean, you can edit directly from these phones and create incredible stuff. Yeah. And tech reviewers know to make that one great video isn't the game. The game is you're going to make another one in 3 days, and you're going to make another one in 3 days, and you're going to make another one in three, and you're also going to be on someone's podcast, and you're also going to host your own podcast, and you're also going to do a travel vlog, and you're also going to be posting on social media. And, it's the same conversation I had with TK Bay, the same conversation I had with Enabong, because Enabong's head for, media and marketing is really savvy. We're not competing. My channel fills in the gaps of your channel. It was a really enlightening conversation that we had when I first met you, because I was all about, I mean, let's be fair, I still am, but the rear camera selfie is obviously superior to the selfie camera selfie. But you having that conversation about the different nuanced camera modes and camera apps, and it was the fact that you didn't just acquiesce to me saying, oh, but I just take photos blind because this is the better camera, and that you pushed back and you went, well, but no, because when I want to do this, I need this, that I actually started taking selfie cameras. I still don't take them seriously. I'm sorry. That's never going to change. I'm the record keeper. I don't take photos of me. I take photos of everyone else in my family. But it was that. It was like, oh, this is going to be interesting. This is going to be fun to watch what she does. Because I've been in other conversations with content creators where my boorishness would sort of win over. It wouldn't matter if I was right. It was that I was talking longer and then they stopped talking. And so I won. but it was the fact that you didn't just let me win. And I think that's something that other content creators recognize readily. Here's someone who has been making videos on the regular. Here's someone whose videos started out stylish from the get-go and who has a very clear voice what they're trying to accomplish, and in topics that I'm not very well versed, she seems to be pretty savvy. And so as soon as we see something like that, it doesn't matter if you have 1,000 followers or if you have 1,000,000 followers, that's someone that you want to follow, and that's someone that you want to talk to, and that's someone that you want to talk about.
I appreciate you saying that, because that's a very valid point. Like you said, you do not take selfies and I do, but that doesn't mean I'm not for your content. Like I said, I watch your videos. It helps me so much. Like, it's just that we have different priorities, right? And your priority isn't more important than my priority, nor is my priority more important than yours. We're just different. And like, more than anything, what I want to do is just establish that my priorities are valid too. So it's like, it does happen a lot on YouTube, where people go like, oh, I like your content because you do selfies, and let's say Juan doesn't do selfies, and I'm like, there's nothing wrong with that though. He doesn't do selfies, let him not do selfies and continue on not doing selfies. We're okay.
I hate selfies.
No, it's so fun.
It seems to be, and again, I mean, not to sort of belabor this point, but I look at your channel and I look at Board at Work. Board at Work does much better gaming coverage. I game on my phones hard. I have no interest in making gaming a big part of my commentary, because I enjoy gaming and I don't want it to become a part of the job. So I kind of turned to his channel to sort of be the filler on gaming that my channel can't provide for people on my channel. If we're going to be talking about, the software that goes into algorithmic beauty modes and filters and good lighting and stuff like that, I'm not your guy. I am mm-hmm. I'm very knowledgeable about cameras and about audio kit. I'm not your dude. you want to take that nice like soft focus photo of yourself.
I mean, it's funny you say that because especially in Asia, mobile gaming is big. It's mm-hmm. big business. I've been getting comments on doing gaming tests, but I mean, I don't think I want to do those because I don't game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If ever I do gaming, it's probably going to be a beginner type gaming thing because that's who I am. And I would have no problem. Like, I was before I got ready, I saw that you posted how you did your gaming controls on mm-hmm. the Velvet. And I was about to share that and go like, this is another gaming thing you guys can watch because literally I cannot. Because even in my video, I shared Joshua's video because mm-hmm. I'm like, see, I can't. So stop. Like, even if I set it up, we're not going to get it. I'm going to get killed. I did the tutorial on that other game. I got killed. So I don't think you'd enjoy that. So.
Well, if you don't mind my asking, is gaming any part of your like downtime? I mean, I know that uh-huh. geeks and nerds, we overlap, you know, those Venn diagram overlaps on things. Mm-hmm. Like if someone's into certain types of media, there's a good likelihood that they enjoy certain types of games. But mm-hmm. I'd be curious, like, if I were an audience member of yours, I wouldn't want to feel like you were trying to fake an interest in gaming just to satisfy some of these people that are complaining about not hearing your opinion on gaming when there are a dozen other channels that are going to get into here are the thermals and the frames per second. We can see that after 30 minutes, the Exynos dropped. And so that's not very good performance when you're in the middle of Fortnite. I mean, like, I already know, I mean, off the top of my head, I know 5 channels that would give me in-depth stuff like that. It's not to say I wouldn't want to watch your game stream, but if you weren't enjoying it, why would someone want to watch that?
No, exactly. For me, I mean, my last few reviews, I didn't put it on the Velvet because I just gave up on the gaming part. I felt like it's, you know. But my last few reviews, I even included a tiny area where, because, okay, let me start from the top. I do a little gaming. Mm-hmm. I do PUBG. Okay.
Call of Duty.
Call of Duty is too much for me. I'm like, I just want to shoot people. Like, kill, shoot, we're done, die. And I mean, I feel good because I win in PUBG and I'm like, ha! But it's that. Weirdly, I enjoy Asphalt 9, but like, I don't understand why there are so many cars. Like, I don't know what these cars are. They keep on giving me cars and they keep on telling me to upgrade cars, but I don't know what I'm doing. I just like the racing part. So that's fun. But like, other than that, I'm like, what is going on? Like, the first month I played Asphalt 9, I didn't understand why there were so many menus. Right. I wanted to just get on the racing part. And it didn't occur to me that it was like levels.
Yeah.
But to get stuff, to buy stuff.
But because the game is monetized in that really obnoxious, you know, like buy fuel, upgrade nitro, you know, buy a car pack, you know, buy a new fender. I tapped out on racing with there's a mm-hmm. jet ski game called Riptide, and you can buy in-game currency to improve your jet ski, but really you buy the game once and you just play the game and you jump into the game and you mm-hmm. race. And then when the race is over, you can go into a menu and upgrade your jets. You kind of have to upgrade your jet ski as the races get harder, but there's none of this like cooldown clock and now your car has more gas and now you can do this and now your racer fuel is up. Did you drink enough Mountain Dew? Mm-hmm. I mean, like all of those little distraction maintenance things, I have zero patience for. I try and like gnaw my arm off to get away from those kinds of games as fast as I can.
I mean, I'm another, like, aside from the whole, like, what is going on aspect of me and playing games, mm-hmm. I just am drawn to games with cute stuff on it. Like, I would play it because it's cute. I play the farming game because it had the tiny teddy bear on it. Like, I had it on three phones. I had two
Right.
accounts. So there's that. And also, and this is a conversation that me and Joshua had, if you didn't grow up gaming, it's a different like thought process. Like,
Right.
I played Chrono Trigger because Joshua always has Game Grumps on. I enjoy the Game Grumps because they're just funny. They're just like dicking around, laughing at everything. And I'm like, what is going on? Like, I feel like I'm sitting in a room with some drunk friends, you know?
And they're speaking an
So there's
alien
been growing.
language of gaming. Like, yeah. No, I
Yeah.
get
Just
you.
I'm just like, this, yeah, this has happened to me so many times in real life. This is enjoyable with that video. So they were talking about this game, and I'm just like, okay, this is curious. Joshua gave me Chrono Trigger. Have you played Chrono Trigger? Because I
Oh,
got lost on
yes.
like level one. I got into the portal thing, and then I couldn't find a way to get through the forest. That's how bad. Like, I literally was just like, there is nowhere else to go. I don't understand how. And Joshua was pointing out that, you know, it was like common sense to gamers where to find the entrance or
Yeah.
where to go to like get to the next area. I was stuck there. Like, you know where I stopped? I got to the nuns. I stopped. I'm like, I'm confused. But to get to the nuns, I had to ask Joshua, find the tutorial. I'm just like, I haven't
It
even
does
gotten to the story yet.
seem that gaming, especially like console gaming, AAA level gaming, it sort of it takes a certain amount of experience for granted. There's a certain language that I think you summed it up really well, that if you haven't been growing up with gaming as gaming has evolved to fit these mechanics, I my wife had almost exactly the same experience that you're describing with Chrono Trigger, but for her it was Drake's Uncharted. And it's like Drake's Uncharted, you're watching an Indiana Jones movie play out. I mean, it's this great, huge, fun action adventure game, but the puzzle mechanics are so well hidden that you, if you play games like that, big third person adventure games, you know to poke around, to go and look, where does this rock fall? Oh, there's this vine over a pit. Maybe I should jump on that. For her, it was like, well, I would never go by that rock. That rock looks like it's going to crush me. So she wouldn't go and explore. And you're like, no, that was actually the thing you needed to go push a boulder over that hill. And yeah, I know, babe. It's. So now what you need to do is climb on this ledge and scooch around the edge of the wall. And she was like, but I don't want to. I would never do
And it's also like for me, it would be like, wait, I can scooch? Like,
that.
wait, what? Like, what can this do? And then I go like, can I change the outfit? Because if I'm staring at this person running around the whole day, I would want it. I would want my character to have a cute outfit.
Well, if you don't, if you you'll pardon the recommendation. If you just want to get into killing people as aggressively as possible, and wait, and you want like cuteness, like kind of cartoony graphics, and you can customize your outfits and stuff, you might want to check out Battlelands Royale. So it's a battle
I'm
royale.
writing that down.
But instead of it being like PUBG or like COD, you know, like first person real shooter kind of mechanic, it's top down and it's dual stick. So you move with one stick and you shoot with the other, and it's a super cartoony little like cutesy bubble art shooter. And you're really competing against other humans, like just like in any other battle
I'm doing
royale.
that.
But the mechanics are so simple. You move with one thumb and you shoot with the other in the different directions. I'm not the biggest fan of Fortnite or PUBG. Battlelands Royale is my jam. I
Okay, I will
would
get to this one.
enjoy maybe, you know, sort of meeting up with you and just running around a little cartoon landscape trying to murk as many people as we possibly can.
But okay, so I also am playing this text-based RPG game right
Beautiful.
now. I don't like, so okay. But quick background is that I was getting frustrated at how when you shoot videos, it's a one-way conversation. But I didn't want to be chatting with everyone via what do you call this? Via Instagram, because like I mean, Instagram is basically post photos for me. do stories, but like to actually interact becomes such so taxing on that app. So I was suggested that I make a Facebook group, but I didn't want more stuff on Facebook. So I ended up creating a Discord channel, which is nice because I've actually made so many friends.
Yeah.
I've discovered other people's content. But the main thing is that we have an RP text-based RPG on it. And I've died so many times. So I'm literally like half the level of all the guys on there. But it's still going on. Like I'm still 3 a.m. I was just like RPG hunt, RPG. it's crazy. But it's also like there was a learning curve, but it's also simple enough for me to get it.
Mm-hmm.
But then I put in a Dungeons and Dragons type RPG on the server.
Mm-hmm.
Like everyone was like, this is too much. We stop playing it. So yes, it's like it's simplicity is key.
Well, it
really is that.
It's kind of a lost art, isn't it? You know, it's a different type of storytelling, imaginative adventure. I remember it was one of the first. It was kind of how I learned how to type. Was there was a text-based adventure game set in the world of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and I had this on an old DOS machine. That was our family's first computer. And I wanted to know how the story played out, and I would have to keep typing in commands and looking around. And we've kind of lost that sense of imagination and exploration, you know, like you just get a string of text saying, oh, there are some things in the room, mm-hmm. and you have to like, well, examine those things. And they're like, okay, well, this one looks kind of weird. Well, then pick it up. You know, like it's such a it's such an effective storytelling mechanism.
One, that's such a good origin story, though. How I learned how to type was a text-based RPG. But another thing is I also think it's like for people like me who don't do intensive gamings,
mm-hmm.
it's the whole layer of you can do it, leave it, come back and do it. You know, it's not so attention... what's the right word? It's not so all-consuming of your attention.
Well, and I feel like we've kind of lost a few of those genres along the way. Like, I don't know, have you ever seen like a King's Quest or a Space Quest? Those old pixel art story games. Very simple graph. I mean, again, we're talking like DOS computers, Apple IIe's, like way back in the day.
Okay.
I'm kind of showing you my age here by a good two decades. Mm-hmm. We don't really make games like that. Like that for a while, for its time, that was a primary gaming activity. Like that was hardcore computer gaming back in the late 80s. And it's a storytelling genre that's just disappeared. And kind of along the way, we sort of weaponized this combination of immersive graphics, all-encompassing storyline, mm-hmm. Twitch-based gameplay, and like you've got to be plugged in on all sides. You can't like come up to an enemy and then a prompt, you know, you can look at the screen and then go, oh, well, I've got a second to type in what I want my character to do. You know, like that just doesn't exist anymore.
There's no room left for imagining anymore.
No.
Which, I mean, it's the same way as... I don't know if this is completely like a good parallel, but to me, I'm reminded of how you read the book and it's amazing. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're presented with a movie on the book and
not
it's never quite as good because your imagination is free reign.
Right.
I mean, you're also talking to a person who played in an arcade for the first time in my last Joshua visit.
Aww,
so I mean,
but that's adorable.
I was playing with his martial arts teacher's son, who was like a tiny little kid. We were stuck there for a while. He loved playing with me, and I loved playing with him because we were just like button mashing. We were just like fun.
But see, I mean, that makes sense though. Like you not having spent a lot of time in arcades, I would imagine a little kid not familiar with arcade style games either. So you're just both in there, same experience level. What the heck is this?
Yeah.
There's a joystick and two buttons. For you, that's too many buttons. For him, that's not enough buttons.
We were there for so long. And then I left for Manila. And then apparently he was looking for me. It's, I mean, really fun experience. Again, from my side of the pond, it's also very enjoyable to sort of discover these new things.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I'm not trying to go into like mobile gaming. I don't think I'll ever, I mean, never say never, right? But I, unless something happens and I decide that, oh my God, I'm so into this, it's not something I would like to do. But I also don't close myself off from playing these new things and trying them out, because it's actually very refreshing. And if you think about it, I grew up with needing to buy a console or needing to have a computer to play stuff on. And now, like, you're on your phone and playing with people from all over the world. And it's actually very mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, and it is like one of the most accessible ways to sort of to sort of like meet someone new, is to share like that entertainment, you know, those different regions, those different cultures, those different TV shows, different music. It's sort of a shortcut for what is it like over there. Okay, I'm probably never going to be a big fan of BTS, but like I can at least get a sense of what the pop scene is like, you know, just checking things out.
It's funny that you say that, because before I started doing tech content, before I started working to cover tech, I've always been on the internet writing, blogging, doing whatever. And this started because the internet used to be a more glorious place where people just connect and share. And I mean, just a quick tangent, this is why I actually love Discord right now, because it seems like the same friendships I used to get from just being on the internet and having a blog is something that is formed on Discord when I talk to these people. But again, at the time when you did stumble upon to find cool stuff on the internet, there was no Facebook timeline, there was no Instagram, right?
No algorithms manipulating my feed.
No algorithm, exactly. I was this Filipina girl in Manila, and I'm not sure if you know this, but in Manila, we don't, I mean, at least from my demographic, it's not like I grew up on Tagalog movies or shows. We watch Nickelodeon. We watch HBO. I've seen all the Hollywood movies, which is sort of a disconnect. Like, we have a very weird identity that's heavily influenced by
Western
pop culture. So it's weird, but it is what it is. I remember growing up and knowing this is my reality and seeing all these things on TV and wondering, like, is this really how it is? Like, what how do people live in the US? And like, how do kids live in Russia?
Yeah.
You know, you had no idea. Like, imagine, like, that was our time. Like, you lived where you are and that was all you saw. And then all of a sudden, you have this 15-year-old blogging about her life on WordPress, and you become friends.
Yeah.
And it's just an amazing experience. It's an amazing connection. And little by little, your world is like opened up to like what that person feels or sees or what his or her reality is. And
it feels like we've given up in our quest for going viral. In our quest for bigger numbers and more likes, that we've given up our freedom. It feels like we've given up our autonomy, I should say, where I used to have an RSS reader filled with all of my friends' blogs and my favorite articles and my favorite news sites. And instead, for some dubious notion of convenience, we've let other companies tell us what's going to be a popular topic for other people to talk about, or what's going to be a popular video. And I feel like that, to your point, and I completely agree with you, I feel like it's made our communities more divisive, because we're not going to the source anymore, reading the headline on Twitter and getting outraged and then complaining about it on Facebook. And no one who follows us on Facebook is really even seeing what we're complaining about because Facebook's algorithm is acting as a middleman.
Yeah, for sure. I have emotions about the current state of the internet, but I'm going to leave it at I have emotions because I feel like I have to be able to sort out where I stand. Like I have a vague idea of where I stand. Of course, I want more original content. Of course, I'm all here for quality content, for personality, and not just on Facebook, but even on YouTube.
Exactly. Right? Well, I mean, like, I feel like YouTube has actually gone down the Facebook hole even more divisively than Facebook is currently operating.
Yeah. And it's like, it's tough because, again, meeting new people on Discord, for example, like, I am seeing so much promise in people who are just new creators who just, like, you know they have so much promise, but you also know that they're sort of very new to it, and they're not getting the same reinforcement because the content that's being pushed out are all these, I mean, to each his own, right? But again, there's a lot of content out there with so many views that I don't get why it appeals to people. But again, to each his own, I'm probably not the
demographic,
the audience for it. But it's like, it's tough. Going back to my earlier point of being a tech journalist and focusing, hyper-focusing on quality and straight reporting and being first, like that was my main thing, like being first, having a scoop,
right?
Like it, you sort of feel like having a scoop would give you all the numbers. That's not how it works on YouTube. I've had videos that came out like one of the first in the world. It's not gonna get those views. You know, it's like, it's not, it's just it doesn't work that way anymore. So I guess The challenge now becomes, as a content creator in today's world, where do you draw that line? What is your balance, right? I always say that my main dream in this whole world, in my whole essence as a content creator, is to be able to find my balance of seriousness, and there's a Tagalog word for it. I don't know what it directly translates to, but like sort of like nonsense. It's called charot. Like char, like when you, sorry, we sort of use that word to connotate like it's a joke.
Okay.
Like, oh my God, look, the sky is blue, char, or oh my God, the sky is pink, charot. So it's like, so for me, like my ultimate goal as a content creator is have the right level of charot or nonsense or kidding or entertainment. And be able to embed the facts and the information or even value, right? I guess, I think that's a struggle that, I mean, for any well-meaning content creator, that's the line we're trying to find. If the algorithm wants this sensational, loud, screaming content, how do I balance that with my integrity and wanting to create quality things, but still being able to hook what they want, right?
And getting the feedback on that is increasingly difficult. I mean, Josh and I were having a part of this conversation, and this is pretty regular soapbox fodder for me, for people who follow my podcast. But, you know, I go and I subscribe to Issa Does Tech, and YouTube looks at that and says, oh, well, if you like tech channels, here are three channels with each channel has over 10 million subscribers. And like YouTube could not be more clear in their intention to shove someone out of the way to put something else that is a bigger popularity tentpole right under my nose, which means I also know, I mean, I don't know, but I have that really strong sense that that's probably also what they're doing with our videos. Oh, if you liked this video from Issa, you're probably really going to like, you know, this humongous tech blogger. And you're like, I'm making an effort.
Yeah,
I am making an effort to click on the channels that I want to see, smashing the bell icons for the creators I want to follow, sharing your content outside of YouTube on Twitter and on Reddit. And YouTube still doesn't know my behavior well enough to not push my friends out of the way when I'm trying to participate with their content, which speaks to me, we've got a systemic problem for any content creator that wants to approach this from a singular perspective that doesn't fit the trending topic list that YouTube creates every day.
Yeah. You know, I definitely agree. Another thing that I've had, I mean, I've been challenged by would be that precise algorithm does not have space for the type of tech content I create. So when I do get a lot of hate, it's when I have a video that performs outside of my reach, which I want, right? But then it gets pushed to tech people who want techie things. And then what happens is I get hate for my video with a pink thumbnail and pink text and pink background with a girl in pink hair talking about how shit is nice and could be pink. But because it's about a phone, they expect me to start doing benchmarks.
Where's your Geekbench score?
Temperature
where's
tests and gaming. Exactly.
I've seen Geekbench scores on everyone else's video. How come you didn't do one?
And I'm like, I'm sitting here with my pink hair going like, do you think this is what I'm about to do? Right? So it's I think that for me, that's still something that I'm trying to find a way around. I love the tech community because everyone's so open and willing to collaborate, to help out. But it's also for me, and I'm trying to jumpstart this tiny area of tech content where it's not that type of tech mm-hmm. content. It becomes harder because I always, most of the time, get snowballed by what is being pushed back.
Right. I mean, like to validate your experience there, I hear offline, there are a few content creators that I don't think would want me personally, you know, sort of discussing their experiences. That's not really my story to tell. Mm. But even for me, mm-hmm. There's like a core group on my Discord server and, you know, people that I like to hang out with on Twitter. And then there's sort of like a loose periphery of people that are regular viewers. And whenever one of my videos cracks beyond that, it's like the conversation, you can almost see when a switch is flipped and it just gets mm-hmm. toxic. And
mm-hmm. yeah.
And for me, it's usually because my content is so nerd nuts and bolts, they usually can't mm-hmm. attack me on like, well, how come you aren't benchmarking this? In fact, they usually come to me and say I'm benchmarking too much. The regular people wouldn't care about some of those benchmarks. But
my God.
But it's to that same token. It's anything to invalidate my experience as an individual. It's anything to invalidate mm-hmm. me as a person with an opinion. It's anything to sort of diminish because I'm not backed up by 10 million subscribers, that I must not be worth something to this conversation. And I don't know what it is about YouTube's platform that it's like once we kind of leave our sort of regular viewers, it's like we're immediately thrust into some of the most toxic flavors of these conversations. Yeah. So, I mean, to your same token, it's like I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't want to contribute something to the tech community that I personally get so much out of. I don't know that people fully understand what it's like when you're not talking to that community anymore, but YouTube seems to think all of these other people that don't share my flavor of tech commentary, but they say they like tech, that we're really not like-minded, you know, like that. I stopped considering community because my community of people don't go out and harass people that have different opinions than them. My opinion, I mean, my community are people that fill in the gaps on different experiences that they don't share. That's my community. And it feels like YouTube mm-hmm. doesn't really foster that very well. Yeah.
No, I mean, just a quick commercial. I have gotten hate for saying that I have tiny hands, so I'd want tinier phones. And someone straight up said, like, get bigger pant pockets. And I'm like, so what do I do with my tinier hands?
I mean, first of all,
switch them out.
Saying that to a woman is the funniest thing ever, because I don't think my wife owns any pants with pockets that are functional in any way.
Exactly. So,
again, it's like, if someone says that to you, you can almost say, it's like, oh, you've never had a girlfriend. Oh, well, that makes perfect sense.
But I mean, basically, I'm like, you are telling me how it feels like to have my hands. You're explaining my experiences with my hand size. Like, this is unreal.
And this is like the, but, and again, I can point to some creators, people of color, who are dismissed for basically terrible and racist reasons in some of these conversations. I guarantee you, I mean, like, if we were to go and look, if you were to put out an iPhone SE video and say almost the same things that I say, because of how much I love a phone that has a nearly perfect one thumb experience, I bet you would be directly confronted in ways that people would never think to challenge me on exactly the same points.
Dude, I get hate. So I got hate for wearing a tank top. I got called like a game streamer. And I'm like, you stupid. I'm like, I got called the boob streamer. And I'm like, okay, literally, one, why don't you try shooting in a tropical country? And two, I'm sorry to your viewers, but I'm just going to say it. I don't even have boobs, like those boobs, to merit being called that. But I guess, thank you. I mean,
sure.
It's weird. Like, I got hit. So I do camera walkthroughs now, because I realize that, I mean, for girls, that's what you look at. Like, what can this camera do?
Yeah. Right?
So I do them in front of a mirror. One, because my dresser area is nice and it's very aesthetic. And two, I like it that when I do the walkthrough, people can see the screen and the back. Mm-hmm. And when I do the zooms and I'm just sitting there, it sort of gives you an idea of how far the thing that my reflection in the mirror is from me. Mm-hmm. I feel like that adds a dimension to the videos. But I got hate for doing that, because I got called, what was it? Like, the guy was alleging that I wanted simp or some weird thing like that. That's why I was in front of the mirror. And then he got mad that I think his quote was like, why are you talking to us like we're children? I'm like, well, you're acting like one, but okay. But yeah, I got hate for wearing shorts in an unboxing where, like, it was a big unboxing. So, like, I was sitting on the floor with the boxes. Mm-hmm. So I got hate for showing my legs. But then I got hate for just, like, not dressing up. So it's like, anything you do, people will find a way to, like, just be crappy about it. I mean, not to discourage, you will get that. It's just that what you also don't see are the people who support you, or, you know.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on rglowingrectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing is we can always point to, I feel, that there are people that genuinely follow and appreciate the work that goes into the various voices that we see in tech. I feel like this has been a kind of a necessary mission of mine over the last 2 years. It's not so much like I'm really all about trying to get people to air their dirty laundry. It's not it's not to complain about the rarefied position that we're in. I think we're all grateful. I mean, this is an amazing part of this conversation. This is an amazing part of the industry to be in today. But that's not to say that we can't confront some of the challenges that we still face in these various communities. And precisely because of what you were saying, I mean, like, what got us all into this was this discovery and this shared experience, but from different perspectives and from different cultures and from different ideas that before the internet was, I can remember before the internet was a thing, I never would have dreamed coming out of, you know, Las Lunas, New Mexico, that I would ever have these opportunities. It's to say that we still have some road to travel. It's to say that we still have some evolution to do. It's to say that we've got some worries that we might be taking a few steps back in a few areas where I don't feel in our current media climate that we're doing a good job of building people up. You getting started a year ago are facing a completely different challenge than how I started my channel. Like, it doesn't even resemble the same thing anymore. I don't know that I would still be in this game if I had to start a channel today with the way that this kind of content goes down. So I have to say it's been tremendously exciting and also more than a little bit validating to see how your audience has grown, how your content has refined itself. And to see that people are starting to share and to talk about your, like, when I'm seeing your content show up in my Twitter feed from like 2 degrees of separation, mutual friends, like that's exactly the kind of thing I want to see because I want my text landscape to be more diverse.
You know, I also just wanted to say that I appreciate the efforts that you put in. This is no, I'm not even kidding. Like that, I mean, I'm never on Reddit, but I like the only ever time I'm on there is like I'm on your little Reddit. What do you call it? Channel?
So it's a subreddit. It's a sub part of Reddit. I really wish I could claim more credit for that, but especially over, I would say especially over these last like 6 months. You know, as we've kind of gotten out of the last year and we've kind of gone into the pandemic. It has been so exciting to watch that grow organically because every time I go there, I will literally find a channel I've never seen before. And like, this is exactly, I mean, cause again, it's my subreddit, but I'm rarely at the top of my own subreddit. You took the top spot the day that we were recording this. You took the top spot away from me with an LG phone when everyone knows I'm the LG shill. And there's Issa at the top of the leaderboard for today.
So, okay, funny thing about that LG phone. Just a quick background. I am not the most knowledgeable in LG phones. Like, I've done the V50. I don't even have a video on it. It's a phone I enjoy. Right. I did a hands-on on the G8X. I didn't get a unit of the final one because... a tricky thing when you're based in Manila but covering global tech is that sometimes how brands are set up, they don't get that your coverage is, you know, encompassing. But okay, I mean, more and more brands are getting that, so I'm thankful. But again, it's what, going back to what you said, it's growth, right? It's what you're trying to change. Mm-hmm. But so I really wasn't the biggest or most knowledgeable LG person, but I always tend to gravitate towards tech that I feel people design with my demographic in mind.
Okay.
So a good test of that would be if my mom or my sister, who can give like two rats asses over the stuff I make, actually ask about the phone. And only a small handful of phones have gotten that reaction from them. My sister is still looking for the Z Flip. Like, she legit, this is the first phone where, like, she saw a post from me, barges in my room and goes like, where is this? What is this? Are you using this? Can I have it? The Velvet, my mom saw it, but then she was like, oh, whatever. Like, and then she saw the dual screen case. She was like, oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
I like that. I love that they're doing this. Blah, blah, blah. So I'm like, I see the effort that LG is putting into, but most importantly, I see them looking at my demographic. And that's what I appreciate the most from that.
For sure.
When you start seeing me, I will cover that because the effort in itself is noteworthy.
But in like representation matters, even when it comes to something like, do we have a phone here that might be a good fit for someone?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And again, for some people, they're not liking the phone. And I get that. But I mean, it's an awesome phone. It's the prettiest thing.
It's just a shame, you know, that you don't have like a real fancy single phone case, like with the strap and a credit card holder. And I just feel bad because I'm not going to send you this. I'm going to keep it because I'm going to give it to Marie. And
make no mistake, Joshua has his cases. I will get hold of those cases.
I think would be funny is like I don't think you'll like the standalone because the strap case has a little like a one little credit card sleeve. I don't think you'll like the faux reptile skin case as much as the strap
really?
Case. I'll be curious to follow up with you. I really think you'll probably dig on this because it's kind of like having a nicer pop socket built onto your case.
Okay.
And you still have the credit card slot, but also I just think the material is nicer. And my prediction is you won't like the reptile, faux reptile skin case.
The other one.
As much.
So, okay. I just want to point out that I get that for a lot of traditional tech reviewers, the cases weren't the highlight, but I have legitimately gone through a couple. I will go through a couple more. Waiting for someone to legit just hands on the cases because people keep on talking about that case, the one you're using. Joshua likes that one too, but I'm like, seeing that other one for a split second and I want to see what that can do. And it's funny because I did an iPhone case roundup from IFA and people are checking that. So, I mean, people look, it's like. But I remember watching some videos and I'm like, okay, this one skipped the cases. Let's go on to the next one. where are these cases?
I'll see if I can help you out. It's probably not going to be a major part of my Velvet review, but I'll try to talk about it a bit more.
Little cheek. You
know, it's the things, you know, it's been so difficult. I just looked at the time and realized like we're kind of wrapping up on 90 minutes here. So I don't want to keep you all day. But it's the thing that I think has been a little bit disappointing in the current flavor of popularity tech commentary is missing out on some of the conversation for people who might want something a little bit different. It's a very inelegant way for me to kind of contribute to what you've been talking about, but the LG has been in a rough spot for the last couple of years. To hold an LG with a case like this is so refreshing. It's something that I think a Samsung owner would take for granted because Samsung sells so many units. Samsung owners aren't hurting for really nice premium case experiences. But I guarantee you try and find something for your V50. I still have not found a good standalone case for my V60. They don't exist. So I open this box, which by the way, the box, my daughter's claiming she wants it as her jewelry chest because it's got a little drawer and it's got that open top lid. I mean, she's going to pack it full of plastic costume jewelry. She's so excited that this box came in.
I'm your daughter. I completely get this. I am that person in this
now,
household.
Can I tell you, she loves the look of the Velvet, the white case and the green phone. She came to me about a month before the Velvet got here, and she was like, Daddy, your phone's boring. And well, babe, what do you mean? And she was like, it's just black on the back. And so she ran to her room and she got like, this is just like a Christmas label sticker. And so she stuck this in the back of my V60 because the V60 is too boring. And so that made my phone less boring.
Yeah. No, I completely get that. Also the same reason why I'm gushing over this white case, because that color change, like such a tiny thing, just like,
But it helps. I mean, like, we take this for granted because of some of these techier experiences. But like, I don't know. Did you ever get to play with a phone like the Honor 8? Was that on your radar a while back?
Which one?
The Honor 8 was the one with the blue glass back, and it was the first time we'd seen Huawei make like that laser cut glass reflective material. Okay.
I am not.
It was a while back because I think that might have been just before you were really starting to do stuff with. Yeah. Was it Gadget Match that you were working with?
Yeah. Yes.
So that was the first phone. I would take that phone out in public, and like cashiers at grocery stores. I mean, actually, what they would ask me is, "What case do you have on your iPhone?"
Yeah.
But that was the first time. No one approaches dudes with phones to ask questions, but here was this like electric blue glass back phone that people were stopping me to ask about. And I'm starting to have a few of those experiences with a white velvet dual screen, which feels fresh. And I feel like we kind of take the chipset and the RAM and the storage and the processor and the GPU and the high refresh rate. No one can see that. No one can see a high refresh rate display on the bus, but everyone notices when suddenly I've got two screens working at the same time on a white phone.
No, for real. So the thing about the Velvet, in Asia, we have so many of those. Like, my sister asked me about the case. I have what is this? The Realme 6 Pro that has the lightning thing on the back. It's over there. I'm not gonna grab it. But my sister's like, "What case is this? What's going on with your case?" And I'm like, "Are you serious? It's not a case." I have so many Gradient phones, and I get that. But it's also like the Velvet. I think the thing that does it for me is, aside from the fact that it has a pretty back and has that case, it really does feel premium.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like a premium phone. And coming from a place where, like, mid-range is all the rage, and there's so much great value for money phones, you can really tell what price range the phone is in by holding.
Yeah.
Like, that is a big thing that is tough to translate in video. Because a lot of the time, these mid-range phones for us, like, how do you say it? Like, how do you say that this feels like it's more expensive? How will you be descriptive about how much the phone feels like monetary-wise in your hands, right? But the Velvet, again, and I will reiterate, I would want better cameras, but like at the end of the day, it works the same way as all my other phones are working. Mm-hmm. I'm not a gamer. I'm not. So apparently I'm a heavy user based on my screen on times, but it's not something I notice.
Right.
It is what it is. And I'm pretty sure if I don't notice, a lot of the people that this phone is targeting won't either.
And I would love to also put some of these geeks to the test. Like, what I'd love to do is make like a big, ugly black box, and you could like slot in a phone and then make them use a device not knowing what it was, and then see like,
what
are you doing on this phone? I know we're all kind of keyed up about having the bestest thing here, or the most powerfulest thing there, but show me your app drawer, because I want to know what apps you're using that are really maxing out a premium phone from 2 years ago. And I feel like a lot of people would struggle to show me the power user functionality that they claim that they need. I think it's all emotional. I think it's all, not all of it. I think most of it's emotional. Yeah.
I mean, again, we are at the time where your connection to your gadgets are emotional. These things become representatives of who we are, what we are. And this is why there are people who defend brands to their death.
Right.
You know? Like, it's because for a certain point, at the certain point, you identify these brands and what they stand for the things that you...
I don't care what you say, Issa. This multi-billion dollar corporation, they get me. Right here.
Yeah, I mean... I think it's... I forget which site it was, but they actually did the whole... Can you tell what refresh rate has like 90 hertz right. versus 60 hertz? And like half of like, most of them didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, see, I mean, I've tried to tell. Like I've switched it on and off and switched from this phone to that phone. And like, I just can't.
Yeah.
And I'm not gonna harp about phones not having that feature if I personally don't know.
Yeah.
That. You know?
But it's just sort of the climate of our time, and I know there are probably some folks out there that identify with certain aspects of their gadget lifestyle ownership in a way mm-hmm. that I don't, and I'll keep looking out for them, but they probably won't appreciate the commentary that I feel qualified to deliver.
I mean,
so I
it is what it is, right?
I'm gonna go ahead and start wrapping this up. I actually got way off script with you. I had a whole list of questions like, so how did you get started, and
oh
where
God,
do
I'm
you
sorry.
Come from? No, this was way better than if I had gone
sorry.
Down that normal conversation route, and really it just means we'll have to have you back sooner rather than later, and we can fill in some of those gaps on, like, you know, what prompted you to start your own channel. I think it's more important that your channel exists, it's been around for a year, and that it's kicking some ass, which just makes me really happy.
Just
as we're getting wrapped up here, what are some of the projects you're working on? What are some things that you can share that you're excited to be
working on? So I'm happy to announce that I will be judging, what is it, the James Dyson Foundation's James Dyson Awards for the Philippines. So if you're not familiar, I mean, you're familiar with Dyson, yes.
Of course.
But the James Dyson Foundation is basically their separate charitable arm, mm-hmm. which aims to, uplift and encourage kids in engineering background. So basically, this is an annual invention show.
Nice.
Together with a Dyson senior engineer and someone from a university, I get to judge the Philippine leg, which, I mean, obviously, I'm not an engineer, but I would not know the struggles of being a young engineer.
Mm.
But I'd imagine that there is a higher barrier to entry, especially coming from a third world country. I thoroughly believe that, I mean, we have the best minds here. I mean, bias. but in my mind, to my mind, this is a very noteworthy thing to be doing, because if this one brilliant mind gets a platform for their invention, it has a possibility to make or break.
For
know?
Sure.
So that is a competition. I think they're closing entries. And this is a worldwide competition. I believe there's a US arm in Asia. It's Singapore, Malaysia, if I'm not mistaken, and the Philippines. I think they have a Europe leg and the US leg.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, I think they converge.
Gotcha.
I'm not quite sure about like how it does that, but I mean, anywhere in the world, if you're an engineering student, this competition is still open. You can submit your entries up until like mid of next month, I think. So there's that. Hopefully, this pushes through, but I'm also slated to be a speaker of one of a trade shows that we have in Asia. We'll see how that pans out. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say. So
no worries.
There's that. Me and Joshua are also trying to set up our new podcast.
Mm-hmm.
It's venturing out towards more of how, I mean, we as an LDR couple connect, use our stuff. I mean, it's basically we just happen to be tech reviewers, but right. we're actual people who do other stuff.
You're people. You eat food?
God forbid.
And go places?
God forbid I have a life outside of this screen. But aside from that, it's really more content. So many phones coming out in the Philippines. One this last month, I think we're at like 15.
Phones, just from Oppo, right? Like here. they release a phone, phone every day, from what I hear.
We had three from Realme, three from five from Xiaomi. We had one from Huawei. We had one from Vivo. I have another, like, two things slated for a next week's launch. It's crazy, but it's amazing. Again, yeah. It's amazing how fast technology is. I want to do more home stuff. I don't know, wearables for sure. But yeah, I'm just on my channel hanging out. I have a Discord chat. Come chat. It's very lax. We play games the whole day.
That's great.
So that's.
So I'll make sure to keep links. I'll get the full rundown from you too on different channels and stuff, because I know of Issa does like sort of the travel vlogging separate channel.
Oh, I forgot about that channel.
I mean, like, because again, I mean, the thing was, like, you know, it was such a lovely conversation on getting to catch up with Josh mm-hmm. recently, which is hilarious because we don't live that far apart.
I know, you guys should hang out.
I know, we should.
I mean, when you can go out.
When we can.
When you can go out, you can stay at home for now.
but yeah, the thing that I've always appreciated about Josh's approach, and something that I enjoy about just your sort of overview, was the application of lifestyle. You know, it's very clear when you see some of the other things that he talks about when we just start talking about tea. I still feel like he's not giving my favorite oolong a fair shake, there's like you know what I mean? It's like an informed, well-rounded, and thoughtful approach to creating content. And so, like, yeah, you know, I went down when we were talking about setting up this podcast, and you're like, you know, that video of you and Josh eating barbecue in Texas, and you're just like, that's lovely. That's two people going out and getting a meal is such a meaningful gesture in the best of times, and yet was like this delightful romp down memory lane from when we could leave our homes and go to a restaurant and eat barbecue.
So a funny backgrounder on that channel. So I didn't actually know how to shoot or edit. And that channel, with all the travel stuff, served as my training. And I told myself that I would post one video a week mm-hmm. because the best way to learn how to edit is if you actually edit,
for
right?
Reals.
And it turned into a fun thing. Now, I mean, I've been wanting to post there, but one, no one's traveling. Two, it's just there's so many phones.
Right.
But it's a good look at what life was, and it's good practice. So I always tell people who say that they want to vlog but can't, that I literally could not.
Yeah.
Like, I literally could not. I had to ask people about how to put the smileys in my vlog. And then there was a time in my life where anytime I'd want to do something new, I would have to Google.
Yeah.
And YouTube. And I'd fall down this rabbit hole of how the heck is this something you do?
But it's because of stuff like that. And it's because that we've gotten to see some of that other personality. It's so difficult to convey on the tech channel. But if you don't know where your creator is coming from, it's an incomplete conversation. And
definitely,
like, I love it when people try and start trash talking some of my friends in my comments. Like, well, Josh said something mm-hmm. different about this other phone and he didn't like it as much as you. And you're like, I know Josh. I know better than you why Josh probably doesn't like this feature as much as I liked that feature. If you knew Josh, you would know that baiting me with one of Josh's videos is not going to get us to create YouTube drama. Because that's not who Josh is.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because I've actually done that. Like, I've gotten hate from something. What was it? So my last quick story, my last thing that sort of went semi-viral was I had a video of this band.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a photo of my torso because I do OOTDs. I was in a sports attire. Legit, you could not see my face. Like, it was like legit, like here up until like above my knee or something. And so what happens is sometimes when you're on Facebook, the brands just boost your stuff, mm-hmm. right? So they did. And it ended up in the corners of the internet that I do not appreciate. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm thankful for the boost. It's not their fault that they're crap people.
Exactly. Yeah.
But basically, I got so many lewd comments. And this is where the whole spiral of, I literally screenshot and told on them to schools, work, parents, mothers, girlfriends. But that's another story altogether. I was just not having it. Yeah. Because I'm like, if I'm a woman in tech and I post an OOTD and you objectify me, this is not good. This is my page. This is my space. You don't get to say that without consequences.
Right.
So, but that's another story. But point was, there was this guy who goes like, you could have covered it like this, and then was linking stuff from friends of mine.
Yeah.
And I legitimately went and got out of my way to tag these people and say, do you have a problem with my content? Because this guy says, you might have a problem with my content. We don't have a problem, right? And so all of these people were like, no, we don't. You do you. And I was just like, see, we're all friends here.
I feel the just to hear that, I feel like this is the appropriate note to close out this podcast on. While I've been trying to just kind of help educate my audience, like, I'm a human and this is what I do when I'm nearing burnout, or this is how I make it through my mm-hmm. day, and this is how the sausage is made, because I don't feel people always fully appreciate what kind of work goes into this stuff. I feel now's the right time to also be confronting some of these trends. Like, I think it's kind of gone on a little too long. I think YouTube has been sort of washing their hands of their responsibility for creating these systems that kind of weaponize mm-hmm. certain communities. Same thing with Facebook. I think they obviously have some of those issues too. But it's satisfying. It's validating. It's exciting that we're able to engage in some of these conversations and then also push back against some of the trends that I think we've just been letting go. Like, it's just been exhausting. I kind of let a comment slide here, or I kind of let, a dig slide there. And you know what? No, I don't mm-hmm. need to. I actually can say, hey, not cool. Not okay.
Yeah.
And not even for stuff on my own channel. Like, it's okay if I occasionally wade in on a friend's behalf to say, not all right. You can sit this one down.
Yeah. Yeah. No, a quick note is also, as a woman, I feel compelled to say that it's not okay.
Yeah.
Because if it's a person giving me this crap, I need the person to know that it's not okay. And I want the other people on the comment section to see that what this person is doing is not okay.
It's a teachable moment. In the worst possible way, we can hopefully walk away from this a little more experienced and learned than going into it.
Definitely.
Well, I mean, like, again, it sounds a little hollow, but like, I really love your channel. I've really enjoyed watching your production grow. And it was one of those like big derp moments when I was wrapping up my conversation with Josh, and he was like, yeah, man, I mean, like, Issa's doing this killer work and I feel like her channel should be blowing up. And you're like, why don't I just have Issa on my podcast? I produce my own podcast. I could just do that.
Well, and I've said this a couple of times, I appreciate you having me, and I appreciate you appreciating my stuff. It honestly really means a lot. Of course, I want like-minded people to like my content, but to see another person from the other side of the spectrum actually understand what I'm doing and accept what I'm doing means so much. I also appreciate how you've been speaking up and speaking out to support smaller creators. Because again, without people like you, it's so easy to be discouraged by everything. Like, it's so easy to get lost. Yeah. I know I've gotten growth, yes, but it's also put in any other context. It's not the same growth as this other person, or, you know,
yeah.
It's always easy to find something that will discourage you, but not so easy to find people who will support you even when you're not blowing up.
Well, I am honored to be a part of any conversation that also continues to get me really fun content that I enjoy watching. So there's a little selfish motivation in there too.
I mean, it gets the message out. That's what we do.
And I'm happy to be a part of spreading the word. Well,
there's so much value in that.
Well, I hope you and your family continue to stay safe. I know we still have a lot of challenges facing us, and so keep your head down. But please keep me posted. You and Josh working together on a podcast has me all kinds of interested, especially if it's going to be a bit more of a lifestyle focus, because I think you two both just approach such thoughtful perspectives on your commentary. I would love to hear what that dynamic sounds like on sort of a more...
It's going to be weird.
I'm so down for weird. I'm so excited for that.
It's going to be a lot of me screaming, laughing, cracking jokes. And Joshua being the all gracious person he is
right.
with all his thoughtfulness. It's going to be me brain farting and him
philosophizing. And Well,
that beautiful man and his beautiful brain.
Okay. Sign me up. There's a spot ready on my podcast catcher right now. You've got an Insta review from me on Apple and Spotify.
Yay!
So just make sure you keep it posted. I think it's critical. It's really important to give folks a listen and to broaden your horizons. A fresh perspective, a different voice, considering different values. The landscape gets stale when reviewers all circle the same basic audience in conversation. A huge thanks to Issa for dropping by, and I hope you'll check her channel out. I've got it linked in the show notes. And the biggest thank you to all of you out there listening, subscribing, and sharing this podcast. If you'd like to help support the production of more conversations like these, please head on over to somegadgetguy.com, where you'll find a support banner, and that's where I keep all my current partnerships and affiliates, including my Patreon, where patrons get ad-free versions of every show. And reviewing this show on your favorite podcasting service is always greatly appreciated. Now you know where you can find me around the rest of the internet, at SomeGadgetGuy on the Twitters and the Twitch, and less so on the Facebooks and the Instagrams. And I will catch you all on the next podcast. Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.